I have clients that will say, I will never live in an HOA again. And I have some that will say, I will never not live in an HOA again.
Most people are not equipped to understand the seemingly endless facets of an HOA. That's why we're here, to help you become uncommonly prepared to serve your HOA. Whether you're a board member or a manager, join us in the Uncommon Area.
Welcome to the Uncommon Area. I am Matthew Holbrook, and in this episode, I talk to former Major League Baseball player Matt Luke. Matt is a broker and the current owner of Major League Properties, All-Star Property Management, and Stadium Escrow. And we spend this episode talking through what do home buyers look for in homes that are for sale in a homeowners association, and ultimately assessing what are the good things and what are the bad things that a home buyer might consider in a homeowners association. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and I would encourage you to subscribe and share so that other board members and managers can also tune into the Uncommon Area. Matt Luke, so good to have you joining us for this episode of the Uncommon Area.
Thank you, Matthew. Great to be here.
Yeah, we've known each other for a while, and it's great to have you be part of this. You're involved in residential real estate, in residential property management, escrows, a lot of different areas of real estate. And so I'm really particularly interested in diving in this episode as to just your perspective of how real estate and HOAs come together. But you did something before you got into the whole real estate world, something to do with baseball, I'm guessing. Tell us, what was your background before real estate?
Sure. So I played professional baseball for 11 years. I had a great experience in the minor leagues, major leagues. I played with the Yankees, Dodgers, Angels, Indians in the big leagues. Traveled the world, played in South Korea, Japan, Mexico, Dominican Republic, Canada.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, I got a great experience just playing against the world's really greatest baseball players, Hall of Fame coaches. Got to play in great ballparks. Just really grateful for those life experiences, different cultures, different country and travel. And it was just an awesome 11 years.
Yeah, I bet. Well, I don't want to get sidetracked into the baseball stuff, but I do have two baseball related questions. What's the memory on a professional baseball field that stands out the most to you when you think back on your career?
Well, we were just talking about the Freeway Series a little bit, and it was with the Dodgers. We were actually in season in interleague play in Angel Stadium, and I live not too far from Angel Stadium, and so I had a lot of friends, family, ex-coaches that were there to support me, and I had the opportunity to hit a home run in the ninth inning with two outs.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Off the Angels' star closer was Troy Percival at the time, and tie the game in that, you know, big rivalry series.
Yeah. That's probably a little bit of a bummer for some of your teammates. You have to play extra innings in a spring training game. Was that a real regular season?
Regular season.
Oh, never mind. Then they were happy about that. Oh, that's very cool.
They were. I don't always share the end of the story. We ended up losing the next inning, but we had a moment there where it was exciting.
Well, good for you. And then the other question I was going to ask real quick is, you mentioned baseball stadiums. Which one, like, just absolutely, like, you know, stands out the most?
Yeah, I think the old Yankee Stadium really had an impact on me. The older stadiums, they just, the historical, the nostalgia of walking where other great ball players walked always made impact for me and on me. So I think Yankee Stadium, Wrigley Field, Dodger Stadium, Fenway Park, those older stadiums just have a character that is just awesome.
So you actually stood in the same batter's box as Babe Ruth.
I did.
That's pretty crazy to think about.
Yeah. My second favorite baseball story, not to go on too long, was I did get to hit a home run in Yankee Stadium into the upper deck.
Oh, wow.
And that was on Father's Day, so it was a gift for my dad.
Yeah, well, good for you. Yeah. Well, that's very cool. Well, how did you get into the real estate world?
You know, it was post-baseball. I was transitioning after a few arm injuries, just trying to figure out what my next my next venture was. And I had a great friend, actually from church, that had just gotten into real estate, somebody I trusted, and he was having some success. It was early 2000s, and he encouraged me to consider it, and so I started doing a little investigation and you know, realized that this was something that could get me outside, and residential real estate is a lot of both outside and inside, so I liked the the duality there of not just being inside all the time, but being out meeting people, talking to people, helping people.
Yeah. So this episode is really about how does an HOA look through the eyes of somebody who does real estate sales? And so maybe to start off with, you have a listing, and you see that it is in a homeowners association, and you're saying, I need to sell this home. What are the first thoughts that go through your mind when you know that it's in an HOA?
To get educated, to get information on the HOA. For a listing agent, it's important to know the property that you're helping sell. So HOAs typically are not a negative to most people if they're handled and managed well. So my job as a listing agent is just to get that information and find out, is the HOA well-funded? Is it well-managed? Is it well-cared for? Are homeowners reasonably satisfied and happy with the management of that community?
So how do you go about making that assessment? How do you know if it's well-managed?
Well, my first conversation is with my client. The client who's been there for a certain number of years has information. They've experienced that one-on-one with the HOA. And so I'll dig into that a little bit in my initial appointment. I'll find out what their responses are to, you know, does it have, you know, what amenities does the HOA provide? How are they maintained? Has there been, you know, any history, assessments, things that raises in dues? You know, common question I get is, you know, how often are the dues raised? Yeah. Things like that. So just being armed with that information to be able to share with buyers that come in is important, and I think helpful, because they're important questions.
So I'm curious, because we might see this differently. When a homeowner or a prospective buyer, let's say, asks, how often have the assessments been raised in an HOA? I'm assuming that they are looking and you are looking to give them an answer that says not very often.
Correct. And so usually that question, the secondary question comes up because if dues were recently raised, they're going to want to know, well, is this an annual thing, or is this, does this happen every 3 years, every 5 years? What's the history on that bump in dues? And so I have to typically go back and make a phone call or talk to my client about what that history is.
Yeah.
You know, people want to know what the future looks like too when they get into an HOA, and sometimes the past history may or may not be able to reflect the future.
Yeah. And from the HOA management side, and again, every association is different. There's different situations. But if I was assessing an HOA from the perspective of the assessments, a modest increase in the assessments on a regular basis would actually be possibly a positive sign, because the associations that don't raise their assessments very often get very underfunded, create other problems, and then all of a sudden, somewhere in the future, you get a really big increase all at once, and you get special assessments, and that's when the other shoe drops.
Right.
And so an association that hasn't raised their assessments in a long time or doesn't do that very often, that's one that might make me a little bit nervous, just kind of knowing that, like, what's coming down the road?
Yeah. Yeah, understandably. And so on the flip side of that, you know, I sometimes, I get questions like, how many units are in an HOA? They want to know the size.
Why do you think they care about that?
You know, it's interesting. I think they just want to know, are we in an HOA that has 24 homes, or are we in an HOA that has 240 homes? And sometimes people have had different experiences with HOAs, so they bring in, hey, we had 24 homes, and it wasn't run well, and all of a sudden it disbanded.
Right.
All right. So I think sometimes size gives some stability, where they can drive around and see that, hey, there's pride of ownership here. The grounds are maintained well. Sometimes in those smaller communities, I found people have had experiences where maybe they haven't gone so well.
Yeah. So if there's an association, let's say, that is not funded well, they've got reserves funded at 15% or something at a really low range, and you have that listing and you're trying to sell that, what are you communicating? What might a buyer be looking for that might overcome that type of a negative?
Mm-hmm. Well, as a listing agent, my job is to point buyers to do their own investigation. Yeah. So we order the docs, we give them access to all the information, and then they do their own investigation and make their own decisions based on that. So I have had deals fall out because of underfunded HOAs. I've had recently, the bigger issue is insurance. Mm-hmm. I've closed two deals in the past 4 months where condo developments were underinsured. Hmm. And as both one on the buyer side and one on the seller side. So I got to navigate, I got to help navigate a seller and a buyer through this changing environment where certain types of loans are now required. Mm-hmm. To be able to lend on those types of properties, and explain to them that our insurance industry is in a bit of disarray right now, and you know there's some things that they're working through that change the reality of insurance if something were to happen to this property.
Yeah.
So that's nothing that I can control, but it's information that's important to educate clients on.
Yeah. Especially here in California with the fire insurance. I know that is a really significant issue. And we actually did an episode with an insurance agent on fire insurance for HOAs. But that is a significant consideration, I would imagine, especially when you're looking to buy a home. Can it be insured through the HOA?
Very important. Yeah. And then, you know, you'd be surprised with lack of inventory right now. You know, I make it very clear to a buyer that, hey, the insurance on this property, if things were to burn down and go away, they may not have a full amount of money to rebuild. And so you're putting yourself in a point of risk, and you'd be surprised. Mostly buyers are still moving forward. But it's my job to make sure they have that information. They do their investigation with the HOA. They dig in, they answer those questions, get those questions answered for themselves. With direct contact. So we're talking now to HOA presidents.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I have a couple of them in my phone. I know who they are. And if I want to get quick information, I can get that to my client quickly.
Yeah. I'm not asking you to name any names, but would you ever look at a listing and realize, oh, this is being managed by this management company, and that makes me a little nervous?
Hmm. You know what? I think what I look at is there's three or four larger names that seem to be more prominent that I know have represented stability over the years. So I think when I see those names, I'm less concerned with how properties or communities are being managed. So when I see an unknown name, that's when I do a little bit more investigation.
Sure.
and really dig into maybe making that call myself to find out more information. Yeah. Some HOAs are managed by a homeowner.
Right, right.
And it can get really, for lack of better words, rinky-dinky in regards to how things are managed. And I've seen them be managed very poorly.
Yeah.
And I've seen them be managed very well.
Yeah, it makes a difference. What kinds of amenities are most important in an HOA? If somebody's moving into an HOA, what grabs a potential buyer's attention the most?
Well, every buyer is different. I mean, it just depends on those buyers' needs. But, you know, association pool and spa, common grounds, sometimes front yard maintenance, roof, exterior insurance, those types of things come into play, typically on attached structures. So, you get lots of those questions, and it's important for me to have those answers, especially when we market a property. I'll get the phone call that says, "What does the HOA cover?"
Right.
And sometimes they cover utilities. So it's important to know that. But I think, the general buyer mindset is that the more the better.
Yeah.
Especially if they're paying higher dues,
right?
They want to know that, okay, that if I'm going to be paying a premium in their eyes on what an HOA fee is that I'm getting value out of that.
Right.
So I try to provide that value by saying, hey, you don't have to pay water and trash.
Right.
And sometimes, you could pay 100 or 200 less in HOA and you'd be paying all your own utilities. So it's kind of a wash. So just helping navigate the value of the HOA dues is an important part of my job.
Yeah.
So buyers have a clear picture of, hey, the dues might be X number of dollars, but I see the value there.
Yeah. Are there any communities that where the community itself or the HOA itself has a negative reputation? And again, you don't have to name anybody, but is there a community where you would think, I might be a little bit nervous about this one because it has a certain reputation?
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's the HOA that I would pin the bad reputation on, but there's a few communities out there, for example, that have a history of structure sliding. Mm-hmm. Or soil problems.
Yeah.
And that's really the one that I know where those communities are. Mm-hmm. So those communities are great communities. And so if my buyer or seller is in that community, I'm asking additional questions. Is there history? Are we close to where those certain properties may have had that incident? And so again, getting educated so I can educate buyers and sellers to navigate it. But I don't think that there's a management company that sticks out as stay away from that company, but I haven't done a lot of research on it either.
I was actually more curious on the community as opposed to a management company.
Okay.
I know within our world, there are certain communities that stand out that we hear reputation, that precedes them. And it usually is around just having a history of a lot of conflict and strife.
Yes. One of those.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. And I guess my point is that those types of things actually matter because the word does get out and you could have a beautiful community, but if people can't get along or there's a lot of tension on the board or within the community or the committees, I think at least in our world, that kind of leaks out and people hear about it.
Yeah. I am aware of that as well. One in particular, I think you may even manage.
Oh, great.
But it's because there's been a lot of conflict in the past and there's been two or three other companies that didn't do the job well.
Yeah.
In your job, I imagine there's easy communities and there's a little bit more challenging communities. Yeah. There's easier properties and more challenging properties than what I do. So I think I love the challenge personally of listening to every client, whether it be easy or more challenging, and trying to help them find a solution. So I think that to be able to manage a community that has had a lot of difficulty and turnover is a positive thing. Yeah. For sure.
When it comes to a community's value, do you see any trends one way or another with respect to, is it an HOA or not? And is the value higher or lower in general, or is that not a significant factor?
It's a very good question. I think that it really depends on the community, the geography, where it's located. I have a lot of clients that prefer no HOA, no Melrose.
Right.
And then I have some clients that demand an HOA because they've had a bad experience with neighbors.
Right.
With the neighborhood, kind of falling apart, if you will. So I really see both sides of it because I have clients that will say, I will never live in an HOA again. And I have some that will say, I will never not live in an HOA again. And so I kind of take it all in and realize that there's the HOA communities, I think, provide a lot of value personally for me. There's a lot of deferred maintenance on properties that aren't governed by an HOA. So potentially there's more work, more cost, more effort that I have to go through or help a client prepare for or navigate as we prepare to sell a property. The HOA doesn't, in my mind, provide a stumbling block at all, nor does it really present itself as a positive or a negative. It's something I just take case by case and realize that, okay, we have an HOA on this property. We go through our checklist, making sure that we investigate and we manage the process well.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of studies on this, and what you're saying kind of highlights that a well-run HOA tends to deliver a higher value of a home compared to a home that's not in an HOA. But a poorly run HOA might actually have a lower value. So really what you're saying and what studies have shown is it really comes down to how well run is the HOA. And if it's run well, it's going to generally add value. And those people who say, hey, I want nothing to do with an HOA, my guess is oftentimes they've had a negative experience or they've heard negative stories. And so that's understandable, especially if they're in an HOA that was poorly run.
Right.
Does that fit with your experience?
Yeah, I think exactly. I have clients, again, on both sides of the spectrum. So I have some clients come to mind that are home a lot. They're walking every day, and that's their enjoyment.
Yeah.
Is walking in and around that community, and it's very important to them that their community is well preserved and well maintained, and I have other clients that drive home and close the garage and don't want to talk or see anybody. So you really get a wide variety there of people. But I'll tell you, there's certain communities that love the gated component or a guard gated component.
Yeah.
And so in my job, one of the things I love is I'm dealing with first time home buyers all the way to your final place of residence.
Yeah.
And so I get to really customize the needs of each client based on where they're at and what their goals are. But sometimes the gated communities and those guard gated communities, are a huge plus for certain groups of people looking for more security, more privacy.
Yeah. I'm curious, just going all the way back to where we started this conversation, is you've moved into the real estate world as a career. Was there anything about baseball that kind of prepared you for that? Is there any translation at all between those fields?
Absolutely. We talk about it in I have a team. I have amazing, our team has grown to about 25 people, and it's the same size as a baseball team. And we just have great people and we have a good time, but we're highly competitive. We sharpen each other. We push each other. We have common goals, and we've put together this amazing group that is just driven on serving our community, being servant leaders, being experts in our field, and doing that better than anyone. And that's our goal. And so, the competitive side is, you want to win, you want to be first.
Yeah.
And so sure, that drive is there. And the drive is really to make the most impact in our community that we can and do it while, growing, a group of people that have a common, value of maintaining the great reputation that we're trying to push out there, which is our customers are first. We're the expert in your community. We're here to serve you. We're going to listen to your goals, and we're going to provide the best experience we can for you.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that it's a just a real highlight and fulfilling part of what you get to do when you get to hand the keys to somebody who's just bought a new home and they're all excited. And that first day of owning a new home is a highlight for everybody.
It is. It's a great joy to be a part of that. To be a little part of that is a great joy. And it's one of the highlights for sure of what we get to do. One more thing on the baseball question.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tell our team every day, hit the singles, do the little things. The home runs, the extra base hits, those things are they'll come. But it's the discipline of doing the little things in our work every day that are going to help make us better, make us different, and help us be organized and fine-tuned for those larger moments. Yeah. So teamwork in that, discipline in that, hard work in that, are all baseball, you know, kind of required in baseball, and also, you know, required, I think, in a successful real estate group.
Yeah, I think it's just in general in our world today, we do lose sight of the importance of the fundamentals in whatever field that you're in. People do want to hit those home runs, but it's the repetition of just doing the fundamental things over and over and over again and doing them well and consistently. That's really where you ultimately make the distinction. And so I'm sure that's the same in your business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is the fundamentals of baseball, are really, they take time.
Yeah.
They take time. And I think a lot of our generation, this next generation today, with the instant gratification, those are few and far between moments. And, I really feel that the daily discipline of the fundamentals, having a good strategy, having a good plan, having a good work ethic, those things are going to help catapult anyone in the real estate field to some success. And we've seen that in our community, which we're excited about. We're honored to have that opportunity. But we're highly competitive.
Yeah. No, I understand. Well, Matt, thank you so much for being part of this episode. Really appreciate your insight. And I would just encourage those of you watching or listening that you would check out other episodes of The Uncommon Area.